a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark. Rolled out to my Chevrolet.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. You know, I'm laughing because Alan and I are sitting in my office, and we're just sitting there yakking and talking about some Boy Scout trip he just took, and we both looked down at I actually looked at the clock and realized that it's 10:01, and I know Gil is yelling for us in the studio and probably just going crazy. So, Gil, we're here, buddy. We're here.
Thank you, Mark.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry to put you through that. I'm sorry to put you through that. Nevertheless, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by S&S Tire Auto Service. They opened in 1976. They have three locations to serve you. They've got Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear, so they're West Side facility. At S&S, they offer a comprehensive line of tires. I think they have tires from wheelbarrows to big trucks to RVs. They have any tire that you want for your personal vehicle, but they also have tires for your farm equipment, your golf equipment, your lawn and garden equipment, ATVs and trailers, commercial, construction tires. So really, whatever you want, they have access to or probably have in stock. They're going to balance your new tires. They do alignments and they do suspension work. So if you're looking for new tires on anything you own, visit one of the S&S Tire locations in the West Valley. Have you ever been to their warehouse?
I have not.
Okay, it's pretty awesome.
Is it?
It's big. It's big. They have lots and lots of tires. But I do remember walking in there, and you know how the forklift tires that we have are kind of bald?
Yeah.
Because the forklift's 20 years old.
Right.
I remember seeing some forklift tires there, and I made a mental note that when ours finally, we can see the air inside the tire, we'll give them a call and have
right.
some tires put on it.
Right.
All righty. Alan Salem is sitting here next to me, and he works at the shop with us. Have you had any exciting cars lately? Let me tell you that we had one that was a diesel. It was a Duramax diesel, and it was a situation where intermittently it wouldn't start, and they would use ether or something like that to get it running. And ultimately, they ended up determining that it was the fuel filter canister.
Fuel filter housing assembly.
Housing assembly. So
right.
Describe that and describe the problem.
Basically, the fuel filter housing is where the fuel filter screws onto, and it draws fuel up through there. And we find that they, on these Duramaxes, that they're leaking real bad and causing air to enter the system and losing its prime, basically.
Okay. So isn't there a big old silver knob on the top of that thing where
yeah,
you can pump it up?
Yeah, a plunger. To pump it up, yes.
Okay, so under the best of condition, the fuel comes in and goes out without any introduction of air.
Correct.
So from there, where does it go? Where does the fuel go?
From there, it goes to the high-pressure pump.
And then it's fed to?
The injectors.
The injector. Okay, so what kind of PSI do you normally have with Duramaxes? What kind of fuel pressure do you have behind the injectors?
Well, up to 25,000.
Okay, so is it dependent on load then or something like that or the speed of the pump?
No, it's dependent on load. Yeah.
Okay.
Basically. Yeah.
All right. All right. So the symptoms of that would be people would have that with the Duramax diesel. They would have a symptom that intermittently I have to add ether to it for no good reason. I mean, there's fuel in the tank and it runs good after I start it, after I get it running.
Yep.
Or even at the best thing is that I've recognized that I have to go out to the fuel filter housing and I have to pump up.
That's what the biggest complaint is, or that's the biggest what's the word I'm looking
symptom.
For? Symptom.
Symptom.
Look, yeah, is people priming it? Although we did run into one the other day that kind of ate our lunch that it was surging at idle, so we were chasing a fuel pressure regulator issue, and it ended up being that housing because it had two symptoms. It had intermittently having to pump it and surging at idle, and we thought the surging at idle may have had something to do with the. So we ended up rebuilding that, and it took care of both.
Okay. 602-508-0960. If you've got a car question or car problem, then you're welcome to join us, and you're welcome to share that with us, and we'll do the best to guide you we can. 602-508-0960. Let me tell you, I was talking to somebody. I get lots of noises on the emails.
Right.
You know, I get lots and lots of emails. But I get lots of noises. And I tell people it's really hard to diagnose a noise if you can't be there to hear the noise. But I told this guy that had a clunking noise in the back end of his car, I said, I want you to put it in a park, and I want you to set the parking brake. Then I want you to get your wife and your kids out there with you, and I want you to shake the car forward and backward. So
right.
Stand behind the car and push forward as hard as you can, then the car will spring back. Push forward, spring back. Under the best of conditions, you'll take two big guys and have one at the front of the car and one at the back of the car, and you're going to shake it violently forward and backwards. So he calls me back, and I said to him, you're going to be able to find what the noise is when you do that violently, and then you're going to be able to find it with your hands more than you can find it with anything else. So he says it was a little bit scary crawling underneath there while they're shaking the car.
Right.
But he says I was able to determine that the bushings were out of the trailing arms. And he says, and so I'm going to put new bushings in the trailing arms. But he said, I could hear it, but I couldn't isolate it. Then I remembered you say, put your hands on things. And he says, and I could tell that I could safely put my hands on the lower trailing arms. And he says, and you could feel and see, and they were synchronized. So when you felt it, you heard it.
Right, right.
So those are things I've learned from your guys with respect to suspension shifts and stuff like that. The problems associated with lift kits and stuff like that. You oftentimes ended up with a clunk on acceleration or a clunk on deceleration.
We see a lot of weird stuff when we lift. Heat shields rattling, driveline vibrations. We see all kinds of, rear axle wrap. We see... lots of different stuff.
So describe the typical symptom given by the customer on a drive shaft vibration, a driveline vibration.
Usually it's a two-piece, so it's usually a long bed, or like a 3500.
Okay.
And what it'll do is, on Excel, it will vibrate for just a moment, just and then go away. And that's usually the driveline is usually after it gets lifted or something is replaced, and the spacer doesn't get put back in the... The spacer wasn't added or reinstalled back into the driveline. And so the driveline's not straight, creating a vibration.
Okay, so just to put it in people's heads, you've got a front drive shaft and a back drive shaft that's connected together.
Correct.
And so what we really want is that drive shaft to be straight as possible. But if you take the middle and you lift it up high, or if you take the middle and drop it down low, that's going to create a vibration.
Correct.
Now, there's an angle, like 17 degrees or something like that, that you don't want your drive shaft to exceed. Do you ever remember seeing that?
Yeah, I don't think it was that much. The number that pops into my head is like 5 degrees, but it could be, it's probably more than that. And that's between two drive shafts. That's not...
Okay. That's not the total angle of the whole drive shaft. It's between the two.
Correct.
So you can have 5 degrees out one way or the other.
Yeah, and typically, too, when the way that, like on a Jeep, You want the same angle coming out of the transmission as going into the differential.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So if it comes out at a 30, you want it to go into the drive shaft at a 30.
At 30.
Yeah.
All right. Do you do we ever do any Jeep Wrangler lifts, two doors and four doors from, 2007 on the...
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We do a few of them, yeah.
Okay. I got a call the other day from Ken at Tempe Dodge. And evidently Mopar's come out with Mopar brand lifts.
Right.
Brand new.
Mm-hmm.
He even says the boxes are something that you would keep because it has Wrangler on the side of the wooden box. Have you seen one of these?
I have not.
Okay, so he calls me up and he says, I got a whole bunch of these, and I want you to tell people on the radio that if they have a two-door Wrangler or a four-door Wrangler, I will sell them a lift kit for almost my cost.
Okay.
Almost my cost. So if there's anybody out there that's been thinking about lifting a two-door Wrangler or a four-door Jeep Wrangler, and you've been trying to decide what lift kit to be, I would imagine that because it has a Mopar name on it, they've probably done a little bit more research than most anybody else.
That's hard to say.
Okay.
Because these Jeep guys are fanatical.
Okay. Who?
These Jeep guys. Guys who, I mean... Have they done more research than a lot of people?
No. Oh, has Mopar done
more research than a lot of people? Certainly. Right. But there are fanaticals. I mean, Jeep is a whole different breed of people. I mean,
that's a really nice thing.
No, not in a bad way. They're just fanatical. There is some very, very good Jeep.
Frank is your next caller.
And I don't
Frank?
Know. I'm actually in the process of texting someone right now to figure out who makes that for Dodge, because someone's making it for Dodge, and I'd like to know who that is.
But what's impressive about it is just not too long ago, a friend of mine had a Dodge truck, and they voided his warranty on his Dodge transmission because he had put bigger tires on it.
Right.
In spite of the fact that Dodge sells a bigger set of tires and wheels for it.
Yeah.
In spite of that.
Right.
So he finds out that at the end of the day, here's what happened to the transmission. A bolt fell out of the transmission, which allowed the fuel, the pressure regulator to fall down in the pan. And I guess the hole is stripped, so it needs a valve body. So now he's hired an attorney to go after the dealer because this has nothing to do with the tires. A bolt falling out of the valve body
right.
and bringing the threads with it has nothing to do with the fact that he put bigger tires on it.
It's always the case. We run into that all the time.
And there's you don't really have any choice. There's no appeal. Once they say
right.
no, you're stuck with it unless, of course, you go hire some idiot attorney.
Right. Right.
Not idiot attorney, but you
2 minutes.
Did I say idiot?
Yeah, that's all right.
Some of them are.
Yeah.
But not all of them.
Yeah.
It just that's your option is to go do that. All righty. We got a caller, Frank. Frank, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Hey, my daughter has a 2012 Jeep Liberty V6. And when it's on the freeway only, it seems like the injectors are plugged. It doesn't happen all the time, very randomly, every 10 minutes. And I've put 91 fuel in it and added fuel injector cleaner to about 2 tanks, and it seems to lessen the problem, but I don't know if that's it.
All right. Well, why don't you give us the symptoms?
It when you're just driving along on the freeway, normal speed, everything's fine, and you get like 2 or 3 bangs, like there's no, you know, that it's almost like a bang, like somebody hits, you know, the engine or the transmission.
Could it be called a shutter? Could you be
minute.
Going down the road and have it shutter on you, and it kind of shutters and misses for a second or two, and then all of a sudden comes back alive?
Yes,
okay.
very short. But it's
okay.
Like 2 or 3 successive, you know, shutters, and that's why I thought it was the fuel injectors were dirty.
No, we've never fixed any, and we think you're talking about an engine miss. We think you're talking about a collapse of the ignition system because...
Yeah, I was going to say power issue, like
yeah.
a complete power failure, like a bad connector somewhere.
Or, you know, Jeeps are famous for cam and crank sensors.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And this one here is a 2012, so we've not seen it lately, but it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. But there's a possibility there could be a code in the computer, and some of the newer model cars have historical data in there. And you can take it to the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store, but he wouldn't know this as if it was written in Japan or Korea. So he's not going to understand it. He's not going to know what it's saying. So you're going to have to find somebody who can do that. You only have 2 choices. You can take it in for diagnostics. It's going to cost you $75 to $150 just about any shop in town. Or you can wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Sooner or later, it'll set a hard code, which will send you in the direction. It could be injector pulse width, but in reality, it's a crankshaft sensor. This could be an ignition coil. This could be an ignition module. This could be a breakdown in one of the cylinders, and only one, where we've got a bad plug or a bad plug wire. Now, I don't know if you have coil over ignition. If you have coil over ignition, you got the coil, then you got the boot, and then you got the spark plug. So we set the coil right on top of the spark plug. Those, in every major brand, have problems. Especially water problems. So if you were to gently take the garden hose and mist the engine, just kind of spray it as if it's a medium-sized rainstorm, then you go drive it and it's a lot worse, then it's going to be in the secondary ignition system, which is the spark plugs, the boots, and the coils. So anytime you get the engine wet, then you aggravate the problem. Now, if it doesn't aggravate the problem, then it's more than likely something electrical in what we call the primary side, which is the crankshaft sensor or the camshaft sensor. And if we skip a couple of beats on the crankshaft sensor, then the computer watches that, and it controls fuel delivery and spark delivery. And when it misses a beat, then fuel and spark are gone. And it's really hard. It's not something I can figure out when I drive the car, whether it's fuel or spark. I think the very best technician in the world would have a tough time determining if it's fuel or spark. So that's kind of what you have to go on. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's 4 of them, 5 of them, and they're wide open. So if you'd like to give us a call, we're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Can panic raised
Welcome back,
from
everybody.
Under my hood.
22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem, Alan Salem here at your service. If you'd like to join us, if you have a car question, if you have a tire question, if you have a diesel question, if you have an alignment question, if you got... what we get a lot in the email stuff is that I took my car into the repair shop and they said I need this, this, and this. And those are hard questions to ask because we need to know the mileage on the car and whether what kind of services you've done in the past. But at least we can discuss it if you have that question now. 602-508-0960. I'm working a case right now in Texas that has to do with oversized tires and wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you go to get information with respect to what will fit on a vehicle and what won't? Where do you get that?
In the file cabinet upstairs.
Okay, I know, but really, is there books up there? Do you have a program? Do you go somewhere on the internet?
Upstairs right here.
Oh, up there. Okay, all right.
Not that I know of. It's really not that. Most of my wheel vendors, I can call them and say, hey, I'm looking for a, yesterday I was working on a ML63 AMG, and I said, I want to run 22s on it. What will fit? 5120 high offset. It's got the big brakes. So you just got to kind of play around with that. And then you just take, as far as tire-wise, you find what the factory tire is. In this case, it was a 295 4020, I believe, and you do the math on that. You find out it's
Is your next caller.
I'm guessing
Bill,
30 inches. So you want the aftermarket tire to be right around 30 inches tall.
Okay, so the guy wants to go from an AMG. He wants to go from a 20 inch tire to a 22 inch tire.
Right,
and those that's 1 inch on the top and 1 inch on the bottom.
Right,
and how much will that cost?
It depends. I don't know, somewhere $2,000 to $3,000 probably
for a set of tires and wheels.
Yeah. Uh huh.
To go 2 inches.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a lot of those customers?
Oh, yeah.
They want to go 2 inches.
They want to get rid of stock.
Okay, all right.
It's not, I have a lot that just go from 20s to 20s because they don't like the design of the wheel or the color of the wheel, the finish of the wheel, offset of the wheel, width of the wheel. I mean, there's a lot of different things.
Okay. All right, well, real quick, I did get an email, and I think I forwarded it to you. A lady said that she kissed a curb, she bent her wheel, mm-hmm. and the air's leaking out, so it seems like there's probably a pretty good divot in the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And she says she wants to know where to fix it. I told her to bring it by and have you look at it because you can determine whether we might be able to fix it or whether she's going to our wheel guy can fix it or whether she's going to need a new wheel.
Right.
And so it's going to be one of those three things.
Right.
How often after they ding a curb or climb a curb can you actually fix the thing? If it's steel, I would imagine it's a lot easier than aluminum or magnesium or any of those.
Right, it is. I would say it really just depends on how hard you hit it. I mean, typically if you blow a tire out,
the wheel's toast.
Usually.
Okay.
I would say 75% maybe we can fix.
Either the shop can fix it or send it to a wheel mm-hmm. service that can have them fix it.
Yeah.
All righty, let's go to Bill. Bill, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning. I've got a 97 F-250 with a 7.3 power stroke diesel.
Okay.
And when we go up to Colorado or something like that where it's cold, I have a hard time getting it to start. And I've had the glow plug kind of checked. A friend of mine said they seem to be okay. I've been told that if you leave the key on until after the, it says wait to start. So after that light goes off, then just leave it for another 20 or 30 seconds, then try to start it. I've also been told that when that light goes off, turn the key off, turn it back on again. It's got a, when that light's on, that's when they're warming up. If that light goes off, they're not warming up anymore. And I was just wondering if you know how long those glow plugs actually,
I would start it right after the wait to start light comes off. I mean, that's, goes off. Do you have a plug?
I mean, it won't start when it's cold. Like it was in the, 30 or so, it won't start when the light goes off.
Yeah, I don't know if it, at that point then, if it's not throwing a code for a glow plug, and I can't picture right off the top of my head if they should throw a code for a glow plug. Do you, but it may not set a light. Have you scanned for codes?
No.
Okay. Because I want to say that, and even one or two will give you that problem. I mean, they it doesn't take much to do that. But it sounds like to me you may have another. You said how cold is it? 30 degrees?
Yeah, I guess about 30 or so. It has a hard time. Now, if I plug it in for 15, or, you know, plug the extension cord in,
right,
for 15, 20 minutes, it'll start right up.
Right.
Well, they it's going to have a timer on it that's going to turn on the glow plug.
Right.
And it knows that the glow plugs are on because of the amp draw of the glow plugs, because they draw lots of electricity.
Right.
So it's going to turn on the glow plugs, and I would imagine it'll set a code. If it wants to see 30 amps and it doesn't see but 24 amps, it's going to know that something's not pulling power.
Right.
So there's going to be some kind of a consideration where the PCM is watching what's going on. It also is going to be able to tell, with respect to the cylinders, what participation they have.
Right.
So if you start it up and that particular one isn't hot, you're not going to have a lot of participation, so they're not going to see that firm spin of the motor on the crankshaft sensor.
Right.
So it really is a glow plug issue. The question is we need to go in with the scanner. We need to see what kind of amps it's drawing. We need to see if there's any codes in there. And then after it starts up, we need to see if there's any contribution issues. Can you get contribution on a 7.3?
I don't think you can do a contribution on a 7.3.
Okay.
But you can watch the crank signal.
Okay, and that's something else, too. It could be easily. It wouldn't be a crank signal because cold wouldn't affect the
right.
crank signal.
It shouldn't.
And it shouldn't really affect the high-pressure pump.
No. No.
So either one. How about if he has the wrong oil in it for that cold of weather?
It could. It would be too thick at that point.
Right.
Never run into a too thick condition. I've run into too thin, like when it gets warm. But
I know, but we're in Phoenix and we don't run into 30 degrees much at
right.
all. What kind of oil are you using, 1540 or 540?
I'm not sure. I don't know if it's a Rotella.
15.
Whatever.
It's a 15.
Rotella's a 15?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. I would try to run a 15 is a semi-synthetic or a conventional?
Semi-synthetic, yeah.
All right, semi-synthetic. And the 540 is a full synthetic. So it flows like a 5-weight when it's cold, flows like a 40-weight when it's hot. It's slightly different than the 15-weight, which flows like a 15-weight when it's cold. And a 5-weight's going to give you a whole lot better performance. So if you do this on a regular basis, my suggestion would be is let's try an oil change, and your motor won't care, and you're still going to run it. What kind of oil change intervals are you going to have?
I would say 8 to 10 with a full
with
synthetic.
With a full synthetic 8 to 10,000-mile oil change interval, you'll be fine. We're going to put you on hold. If you have any other questions, tell Gil, but we got to take a break right now. I'm Mark Salem. Right now it's 12:59, and we'll be right back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm Mark Salem, and Alan's sitting here next to me, and we're at your service, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil, who's owned Automatic Transmission Exchange since 1968, has been around the block. When I talk about gray-haired guys, he's one of those gray-haired guys. You see, in the transmission business, you really need to deal with somebody with gray hair because those guys have the best handle on how a transmission is supposed to work. They're the best diagnosticians, and it's not anything that you can start learning about in January and figure that you're going to start overhauling some of these brand new electronics in March. It's just not going to happen. It takes skills that I don't even have to diagnose these new transmissions. And as a team, it sometimes takes a team, as one guy knows the hydraulic portion of the transmission and the other guy knows the electronic portion of it. But one way or another, you're best served if you live anywhere near 40th Street in Washington to stop by Automatic Transmission Exchange. He'll talk to you and he'll drive his car for free. He's open on Saturday from 8 to 12 for your convenience. Let's go to Rico. Rico, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Thank you. I have a... Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. A 2000 Ford Explorer V8 with a automatic and four-wheel drive.
Okay.
Currently, it's about 185,000 miles. Okay. Back in about 90,000 miles, the transmission would start this, I'll call it a shutter vibration, that just a very brief shutter vibration when it shifted from low gear to the next gear.
Okay.
And the shutter would only take, maybe 3 seconds or so. And it concerned me for a while, so I didn't do it. It didn't really concern me that much, but I just kept driving it. So I still got 180 or about 185,000 miles on it. Shutter still happens, but I've learned to take my foot off the gas just before it shifts, and it just doesn't happen. So But if I just keep my foot on the gas and let it go through its normal, I call it shifting procedure, the shutter vibration doesn't occur.
Okay. Well, you know what you should have done is taken advantage of all the different transmission shops that will drive your car for free. And one of the things that they're going to want to do is they're going to want to see you make it happen, and then they're going to want to drive it. And one of the things they're going to do is they're probably going to manually shift it and see if that makes any difference. So at a traffic light, they're going to pull it down into first gear themselves. Then they're going to shift it 12 miles an hour. Then they, and I'm just giving you stupid numbers because I don't know where it's going to shift. But what I'm trying to tell you is they're going to shift at different miles per hour. Is it something that's a quick shift? Is it shuttering because it's shifting a little early? Or does the shutter go away if we make it shift late? Those are the kinds of things. But one way or another, at 185,000 miles, what do you care? I mean, your transmission's been around the world almost 8 times. So, you know, spending money on this transmission is kind of useless. I would suggest that you take advantage of driving it, you know, taking it to a couple transmission shops and having them drive it with you, because it could be something that's going to be inexpensive to fix. But I think the odds are against that. And I think this is the beginning of the end, and you've already got double the mileage when the symptom first started. And with the exception of having somebody to drive it, just to make sure that it's not an adjustable issue, that's all I would do.
Yeah.
So, just what part of town do you live in?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay. Well, I take it down to ATE on Washington and 40th Street, and don't take it in on Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons. Just take it down there and say, hey, Phil, can we go drive this for a few minutes? I promise not to have you for more than 15 or 20 minutes, and I'll show you how to do it, and then I want to sit in the passenger seat, and I want you to drive it. That's what they do all the time. They do that for free. So just take advantage of it. All righty?
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Rico. Transmissions are kind of tough.
2 minutes.
Yeah.
It is something that is very difficult. And as far as our shop is concerned, if the transmission's completely failed, we'll replace the transmission. But taking it out and rebuilding and putting it back in is not something we're going to do. We're going to lean on a rebuilder that we would use. We happen to use Jasper. But we're going to use – everybody's going to lean on a rebuilder that they use. You can have it rebuilt locally, or you can have it rebuilt nationally. And there's probably 5 or 10 different rebuilders throughout the United States that we can buy a transmission from.
Right.
Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa since 1970. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been providing expert auto, light truck, and maintenance services to their customers. They have ASE certified technicians, and they're going to provide you the very best level, the highest level of automotive service they possibly can. You only need to meet Brian and Thelma. Stop by and meet them. Talk to them. Talk to Brian about your car to understand why they're on our best car repair shops list. They are a great couple who have your interests long before their own. So if you live anywhere in Mesa, and keep in mind, this is important to me. I've had lots of people apply for Mesa, but many of them don't have 5 years of experience. Many of them have hiccups in their Better Business Bureau record. Some of them don't have insurance, the proper insurance to take care of your car when it's in our care, custody, and control. But you're not going to find any of those problems in Thompson's Auto Repair. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley, somewhat centrally located. Thomas Auto Repair and Towing. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour. The phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, if you'd like to join us. The lines are wide open. Gil's handling the board for us, and he'd be happy to take your call. IMM Auto Services in Tempe. They're in the northeast quadrant of Tempe. They're just south of the 202, just west of the 101. They've been in business for a very long time, since 1972. And they work on all kinds of domestic and import cars. What they want to do is they want to work on just about anything in your garage. But if you have a Saab or a Volvo or a Fiat or an Alfa Romeo, they are the citywide experts. I don't know anybody who opens their arms to Volvo, Saabs, Fiats, and Alfa Romeo. Now, we used to have guys, and I've been around this community for 37 years, we used to have guys that would raise their hand and say, hey, I do Volvo, Saabs, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo. But all of them went out of business because it's really hard to make a dime when you're just focused on one car. But with IMM, they can do anything. They can do your Chevrolet or your Ford inside your garage, or they can do your Volvo, Fiat, Saab, or Alfa Romeo. Northeast corner of Tempe, just south of the 202, west of the 101, IMM Auto Service. They're really good guys and good on most domestics and most import cars. All righty, let's talk about any alignment issues that you can come up with. And I'll tell you one of the things. I had a call this week, and the guy said that he had a pull on his car and he wanted us to line it.
Yep.
We hear that all the time.
Uh-huh.
But there's
follow-up. No, you want to know what I hear more often?
What?
I have a really bad vibration. I need to get it in for an alignment.
You're exactly
all
right.
All the time.
You're exactly right.
Drives me crazy, actually.
Okay. All right. Well, and the reason why is we need to explain why.
Right. No, I understand.
An alignment, what are the symptoms for an alignment?
Tire wear, pull, drifts, not returning to center.
And not returning to center means you're driving straight down the road, you turn right, and when you let go of the steering wheel recenters itself. Otherwise, it straightens your car out. That's called return to center. So that's a return. The car pulls hard right or hard left a lot of the times or all the time.
Tire wear.
Tire wear is a really big one. I've got some real abnormal tire wear.
Mm-hmm.
So a vibration is not caused by an alignment. Now, a vibration can cause, or the alignment can cause the tire to go bad, and then it'll cause a vibration.
Sure.
And that's easy. So really, it really boils down to symptoms, because you don't have women coming in and saying that they have a vibration and they have an alignment, they need an alignment.
Unless their husbands told them that.
Unless their husbands told them that. Well, it's true. It really is
true. It is, absolutely.
So the women are much better because they give you the symptoms. Anyway, he calls me up and he says that he needs to do an alignment. And I said, you know, can we talk about that for a few minutes? He says, sure. And I said, does it pull always to the right or always to the left? Or is it just on this road or that road? And he goes, no, it's pretty much all the time. And I said, okay, when was the last time you have your tires rotated? And he says, I just had new tires put on. And I said, good. I said, where did you have them done? And he says, some tire store I remember. And I said, okay, so did you have the pull both before and after? And he said, yes. And I said, okay, let's lean on them just a tad, and let's do this. Let's go back to them and ask them to humor you and just cross the front tires.
Right.
And that'll save us a step. And they'll do it for you for free. So cross the front tires. Now, if it pulls to the left after you're done, then we've got a tire issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it goes straight after we're done, we've got a tire issue.
Yeah.
In spite of the fact that it's happened on two separate tires, we still see that.
Right.
The radial pull associated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on our balancer, our Road Force balancer, does it dial in or can you identify a tire that's pulling hard left or right on the Road Force side?
No.
On the setting? Okay. So we don't have a piece of equipment that has the ability to determine if the tire's making the pull.
No, that would just be a placement, a trial and error as far as a placement goes. Now, it does have, and I don't know exactly how it measures this or what it does, because we don't use it much, but it tells you, like, if you're mounting four tires, it tells you the recommended place for the tire.
Okay.
You know, like left front. But I don't know what that's based on. I don't know if that's based on, like, a lateral runout or a radial runout, or if it's based on road force or what it's based on.
Okay. So the idea is if we've got to pull to the right, the first thing we're going to do is cross the front tires. Okay? We still don't know which tire's pulling it. If the pull moves to the left, we still don't know which one's pulling. So at that point, we have to move the fronts to the back and move the backs to the front. If the pull goes away, we've identified which one it is. It's one of the back ones, but it's not the front ones.
Right. Move, and it would be actually easier if you move each individual one to the back.
You're right.
Yeah, so you move take the left front.
Take the driver's side front, move it to the back, and go drive it.
Right.
And then you take the passenger side front, move it to the back, and go drive it.
Right.
But through a process of elimination that takes a little bit of time,
sure.
You can identify which tire it is. Now, it's not uncommon for your guys to say, don't leave this tire on the back of the car for the rest of its life, because this one's causing the pull.
Yeah. We do that more for like road force numbers, but okay. Yes, that's some you don't technically like to do, but under certain circumstances.
But if the tires are virtually new, and maybe it's a name we've never heard before, then that says something about the quality, because we know the good ones. We've heard about the good ones. So you can't very well tell them to go get a new tire because this one's causing, you know, this is the problem with your pull. Just leave it on the back. Just don't rotate that one, that right rear. Just keep track. Move it in the left rear, then move it back to the right rear and move it to the left rear. Change the direction of the tire. It's easiest.
Yeah. Okay. There's some vehicles that wear out their fronts a lot more than others. Like these HD pickups, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, they eat rear tires much faster than fronts. So if you leave that one on the rear the whole time, it would wear substantially faster than all the other three.
However, the HD trucks are the only ones that do that. Name another car or truck that wears out the backs more than the fronts.
I guess all of the HD trucks that we do.
Okay, yeah, I know. I'll give you all of them.
Oh, okay.
But when you take all the HD trucks, they're just this small part of the world fleet. So every car wears out the front tires twice as fast as the rear tires, because the rear tires go straight their whole life, and all they do is follow the front.
Right.
The fronts are turning left and right, and we're scrubbing the outside edges off of them, because every time they turn right, we lay that tire over.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Aside from the HD truck, when you're talking about HD trucks, are you talking about a particular line, or are you just talking about the 250, 350, 300, 3500?
Yeah, Dodge, Ford, Chevy.
All
yeah,
the crit cross.
Yeah.
All right, so where does HD fall? Is that 2500 and north of that?
Yeah, between 15 and 25, yeah.
Okay, and none of them have independent suspension on the rear.
No.
So they're eating up bad tires, back tires, and we don't even know why.
Yeah, it's either air pressure or load or something. Too much air pressure and not enough load, or too little air pressure and too much load, or, yeah, it's very strange.
Okay.
It does it a lot.
All right. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you want to give us a call and talk about your car problem, you certainly can. When you do an alignment, what's the very first thing you do?
That'd be a question for Adam. I don't know.
Well, what I was looking for is you go drive it and verify.
Test drive it always, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The second thing you're going to do is air up the tires.
Yep.
Okay, no question about those two.
Nope.
Then we're going to do what we call hang heads.
Mm-hmm.
And hang heads is we're going to attach devices to each one of your four wheels and tires.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to tell the computer what kind of car that's on the rack.
Right.
And the computer's going to instruct us to wave a dead chicken around our head, honk the horn twice. It's going to tell us to do some really funky stuff. During that period of time, it gathers up the readings.
Mm-hmm.
And then it presents them on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
The left side, let's talk about the driver's side front tire. There's going to be a green zone and a red zone.
Mm-hmm.
And they want the arrow to be anywhere in the green zone.
Right.
So when someone brings in a car and it's right on the edge of the green zone on the left or the right, it's really not out of alignment.
No.
It could create a pull because a car that's real positive on the left and a real negative on the right is going to probably create a pull, and we would have to even those numbers out.
Right.
So even though the car's in alignment and all four arrows are in the green, it can still have a pull.
Sure.
Now, we're going to pull to the positive side of camber.
Right.
So if we have 2 degrees positive on the right front, and we have one and a quarter degrees on the left front. Those two numbers, 1 1/4 and 2 degrees, those could easily be green.
Mm-hmm.
But that 3/4 of a degree from white to left is enough to cause a pull.
Sure.
So we would either bring the 125 up, or we'd bring the 2 down.
Mm-hmm.
But both of them are still within alignment.
Right.
How many times do you hear folks say, I just had it aligned and it still pulls, or it's in specification?
Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
And I hear 10 times the amount of, I just had them balanced and it's still vibrating.
Those are
my favorites. But I hear that 100 times as much.
Well,
I usually pull a mark on them at that point. I said, I don't care what you've done. I'm going to redo it. That's where I'm starting.
Okay, but at the same time, if you're going to pull a mark, and you can make fun of me all you want, if you're going to pull a mark, you're going to look them in the eye and say, if I can't make it better, you don't owe me a dime.
Absolutely. No question about it.
Okay. I do remember that you had the guy with the Jaguar. Tell mm-hmm. that story real quick.
I don't even remember that story.
Well, the guy with the Jaguar, he talked to me first.
I remember the
car. He had it to the Jaguar dealer. He had it to this uh-huh. tire store,
oh,
that
it,
tire
what,
store, and
it,
this tire.
The tire going on the wheel?
I don't know. No. This is the one that said he wasn't going to pay you until he drove to Tucson and back.
Yeah.
He was down the road 60 miles, and he called you and said, get my bill ready.
60 miles? He was down the road like 6 miles.
Now you're bragging, all right? I'm trying to give a little bit of room for you. 60 miles down the road, he calls you and says, it's fixed.
Yes.
Okay, so on his way home from Tucson, he stops and pays his bill.
Yeah, I don't remember what that was. I want to say that was rotating on the wheel.
Okay,
the tire was rotating on the wheel. I think that's what it was doing.
So on high-performance cars, what happens is the wheel will actually spin inside the tire. So if you were to put a mark on the valve stem on the tire, you put a yellow chalk mark on the tire, right where the valve stem is, they bring the car back, and that yellow mark is now halfway around the tire.
Yeah, it's usually not that much, but yes, it usually moves. And it's typically, if they're chrome, it's really bad if they have gone from one finish to chrome. And it's the worst when, you know, after you get new tires, because we use a lot of lube to mount the tires. But yeah, we're starting to see that a lot more frequently.
The lube on the chrome. The lady with the Ford truck with the blower on it, didn't she spin her back tires off a couple of times?
Yeah, we've seen a bunch of them. I mean, yeah.
Okay, you see that a lot.
Oh, yeah, see it a lot.
You see it where actually the tire is spinning. And what happens is we balance the tires and everything's okay for some short period of time, and then they complain that they've got tire problems.
And it can also be not acceleration, but it can also be braking as well. I mean, they pull out of our shop, and the light turns yellow at Hardy, and they're slowing down. It's already out of balance.
Okay. Now, how often does that happen? Or let me ask you a better question. How long did it take us to figure that out?
Yeah, it always seems to bite us. It always seems to creep up when we least expect it, because it always takes us forever to find it.
Well, but we learn, if I recall right, this phenomenon lasted 2 years before we finally figured it out. I mean, we were rebalancing tires on a regular basis for people, and every time they'd leave, they'd be fine, and then some period of time later.
It got
to the point where we began, I don't remember if we took phone pictures with our phones of the valve stem placement, or if we started putting all the DOTs on top of the valve stem. And after we did that, then we realized the DOT was moving on the tire, so the tire clock, the valve stem was at 12 o'clock, and we put the DOT code on the tire right at 12 o'clock, and then it comes in, and now the DOT is at 3 o'clock.
Right.
And so those are the kinds of things. But it took us a long time, so what's the fix? How are you fixing the chrome wheels? What are you doing to those?
Well, a couple different things. As a matter of fact, you know who called me? Kurt from Kurt's Auto called me the other day, and they were having issues with that on his truck.
Okay.
The first thing we'll do is we'll break them down, and we will take a grinder with a sanding wheel and sand the bead around the inside of the wheel and scuff it up. And then usually what we'll do is we will mount it dry.
Okay.
You got to be careful, obviously, or use something that isn't a paste, just something that's a little soapy or something, and just try to mount it dry, and that takes care of it.
See, Kurt's the reason why he had a problem is because he got that muscle Dodge diesel truck,
mm-hmm.
and he's out there drag racing all the kids.
Yep.
So he's spinning the back tires. So if he has a complaint about the back tires vibrating, and he's got the tail of your butt vibrating and not the steering wheel, then it has everything to do with him driving the truck.
Well, yep. I know.
He's your friend, not mine.
Yeah.
602-508-0960. We're going to take a break in another minute and a half.
1 minute.
And then when we come, 1 minute, Gil tells me. And then when we come back, we'll take your call. So 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and you're welcome to give us a call. We can talk about tires. We can talk about oil, antifreeze, air conditioning systems. When we come back, we're going to talk about what you should do to prepare your air conditioning system for the winter. And I'll tell you right now, the answer's pretty easy. Nothing. So don't do anything. If you made it through the summer, there is no reason to spend any money on your air conditioning. The only reason to spend any money on your air conditioning is as we get into the cold weather, there is one particular request you may make of your car, and the request won't be fulfilled, and it will be directly related to your air conditioning. So we'll talk about that. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan Salem, and we're here to help you with your car problems and guide you with who can help you. So if you live in a part of town and you're looking for a specific shop, we can help you with that. We'll be right back.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we've got Steve on the line. We're going to get to him in just about 30, 45 seconds. But if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Air Park Auto Service. Nadine and Stacy, of which have been friends of mine and my wife Renee, opened Air Park Auto in 1985 in the Scottsdale Air Park. They're located on Raintree just east of Hayden. They're still today family-owned and operated. They've been on my best car repair shop list for years and years. Air Park Auto is a state-of-the-art, clean, and green facility. They have the diagnostic tools and the technicians capable of handling your vehicles and concerns. So if you live in North Scottsdale, I know you'll be happy with the service you receive at Air Park Auto. I'll tell you something else, ladies. Air Park Auto is owned and operated by Nadine. Stacy passed away a couple years ago. Nadine is a very strong woman, and there's not any technician that I know of that's going to be able to look her in the eye and lie to her because she knows lots about cars. So if you're a woman and you're looking for a woman-operated shop that answers really to no man, then Air Park Auto Service in North Scottsdale would be a good place to start. Let's go to the phones. And, Steve, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Just wanted to give a really big thumbs up on my 97 F-250 that Alan had kind of redeemed for me. With the problems that we had with the original computer being reflashed with what we would call an inferior code after I had a programmer crash, and after Alan's done his massaging, I think you've used the cliche that she runs like a scalded dog. but I'll tell you, I couldn't be happier with what we did to that power stroke with that programmer, because I'm able to not only switch to several different settings, I can do it while I'm on the fly. And when I'm not towing that big fifth wheel, I can put it back to the stock mode to where that poor power stroke, when it's on its stock mode, can't get out of its own way. But, you know, that's a whole other thing.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. That's really nice to get an attaboy every once in a while, and as you can well know, I'm pretty proud of this kid sitting next to me. He's pretty good with those Fords. I'd be the first one to tell you that we make a lot of money working on those Fords. Why don't you tell me from your point of view what the heck happened? Start from the beginning and kind of quickly go through the story.
Hang on, Steve.
Oh, okay.
A technical point of view,
he came to me and he had installed a downloadable programmer which programmed the PCM, and he downloaded it, and at some point he went back to factory with it, and during the return to factory it locked up.
Okay.
And when it locks up, he took it to the dealer and had it reflashed
with stock software.
Yeah, stock software
with software that the truck came with
to get it running.
Okay.
Well, he didn't feel like it. After that reflash, he said it's run worse than it's ever have.
Okay.
So I went through it. We looked at all the programming, and I told him, I said, you know, sometimes a newer programming steps back the power a little bit. Sometimes they're pulling power away on some of these new updates. So I went in there, and I suggested we do a different type of a chip, one that attaches to the PCM actual circuit board. And as I went in to pull the PCM out, I had noticed on the board itself where you snap this chip in, you have to sand the gel, the whatever it is, the waterproof insulator gel off in order to get a good thing. And it was already off. And which indicates to me the only reason that you do that is to put a programmer on it.
Okay.
So what I told him was is what I think happened. I think prior to him owning it, it had a programmer on the PCM.
Okay.
So he didn't ever know what true stock was.
Right.
So when he got it, he thought, okay, this thing runs good. Then when he put the Edge on it, it ran even better than stock. I think when he took it to the dealer, I think the programmer on the PCM damaged the Edge going back to stock.
Gotcha.
I think it interfered there. When he took it to Ford, I think they had a problem reflashing it. And this is all speculation, but it's probably a good guess. When he went to Ford, they were getting some interruption because that programmer was still on the PCM.
Gotcha.
They went in and looked at the PCM, pulled the programmer off,
right,
which took another, you know, 50 to 100 horsepower out,
right,
of it, flashed it, and he basically lost both chips. And it took it back even further than, you know, he had ever driven it before.
So he got it, when he got it, he was at level 3. And as they start pulling stuff out of it and returning it to stock, he drops back down to 1.
Or 0.
Or 0.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you talk about programmers and chips, when you do high-performance stuff and you're going to add horsepower to gasoline and diesels, there's a difference between a programmer and a chip.
Right.
One of them is you plug in, make your changes, unplug it, and you're done.
Yes, it reflashes the computer.
Okay. The other one allows you the opportunity to change on the fly.
That's actually technically a module.
Okay. So on the module side, you can drive around. Let's say that they got 5 load or 5 settings.
Right.
So 1 is just the way it came from the factory, and 5 is watch out. Right. This thing's a romping, stomping new truck.
Right.
We don't say that much about Fords, though, do we? It's more like when we talk right. about Dodges. Okay. So anyway, you have a 5-level power source, you can drive around in 1, 2, or 3. And most of them will just say if you're going to be hauling horses and stuff in a trailer, you just don't go past 2 or 3.
Right.
If you go to 4 or 5 and you're hauling horses or trailers or big stuff like that, you're going to hurt something.
Right.
So that's called what?
Well, you can they all change have, on the fly. They all have multiple settings. But the program, the program is BCM, you actually have to return it to stock and then program it again to change the power setting. So that takes, 10, 15 minutes.
But you can't do it on the fly.
Correct. A module basically unplugs, usually under the hood, it plugs in between the sensor inputs from the sensors to the PCM. It skews those signals, so that one you're available to change that on the fly. It's just changing the signal going back to the PCM. It's tricking the PCM.
And then we don't do this on cars that are under warranty because you're going to cause problems in the warranty side. You can't go in there with different software.
You can't, we typically don't reflash if a vehicle's on a warranty. With a module, it's undetectable.
Okay.
The third one is actually pulling the sun, there's not very many of these left anymore, but the PCM actually has a provision for a programmer to put on it, and we slide a little chipset thing onto the PCM board, and that usually that allows us to shift on the fly as well.
So the PCM is the power control module. It's the main brain for the car. We're going to have a couple of plugs on the back of it that could be 3 and 4 inches wide or double deckers.
It's usually on the other end of the computer.
Okay.
Like I don't know if they use it for like a diagnostic port or a programming port. I don't know what they use it for, but it's not.
Now, when you put a module in there, are you going to put it between the two inputs, or are you going to use this other port that you're talking about?
No. When we use a module, it's usually like in the place of the maps, between the map sensor, between the fuel rail pressure sensor, between the injection control pressure,
you're
map sensor.
You're going to interface a particular set of inputs, and you're going to change those to make it have more power. But there's a risk, folks, associated with this. You can hurt your vehicle a lot. You can cause lots of problems, and you can blow up transmissions and all that kind of stuff. So it's really important that you just don't go out there on the internet, buy something, take it up. If it's got, we've seen, 19, 20 levels?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in power levels. You can't just go from 0 to 19 and go out there and romp and stomp your vehicle because you're going to hurt it.
I tell everyone, they say, well, I hear it's bad for my... Everything comes down to your right foot and how you drive it. I mean, if you drive it responsibly and respectfully and you use it for what it's designed and intended for, you're not going to have an issue. But if you go out and race stoplight to stoplight, it's going to give you problems. There's just no question.
Well, and then you and I have had these same modules and programmers in our own vehicles, and neither one of us has hurt our vehicles.
No.
But there's been times when I've been hauling horses, or there's been times when I've got backhoes on a big trailer behind my truck, and I know that my power level is right at where trailer hauling is probably one more step higher is a bad idea.
Yeah.
So as a result of that, I'm real careful about going up hills. I don't flog the son of a gun. I don't have the foot to the floor pulling a backhoe from Rye to Payson.
Right.
So you have to be careful, because I know that if I got the exhaust temperatures up to 1700 degrees, I'd just melt the motor.
Right.
So I'd never make it to the top of the hill. The only way I'd do it is on the back of a tow truck.
Right.
So there's some modules out there that are fun to drive. We've also got all kinds of things that can change a lot of the different patterns. There's stuff out there that can disable your ABS, although I don't know why you'd want to do that. There's also stuff out there that you can put in line, like you said, to change the input signal. So if we tell the computer that your engine's cold all the time, it's going to add more fuel, and more fuel is more power. So you can do that kind of stuff. It's kind of silly to do that, but people can still do that, and it's all over the internet for you to do that. 602-508-0960. Steve, thank you very much for your call. Thank
Dan,
you for the attaboy. And we're going to go to Dan. Dan, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hello. Thank you for the show.
You bet.
Anyone hold on to an old-fashioned headlight adjuster?
Yeah, we have one.
You do?
Yeah, the kind of suction cup to the front of the headlights?
Only had one used once, and that was several years ago. I got an old 77 Dodge.
Yep, we have one that will work.
Let me ask you a question. Are you going right off the headlights?
Yeah.
Okay, we have two different kinds.
Yeah.
We have one that has a suction cup that fits on the front of the headlights, and then it has levels up and down and left and right. We can use those. But we also have another one that's more sophisticated than that, that sits back from your vehicle, and it takes your headlights, and then you adjust from there. On the older stuff, we usually use the ones that go to the headlight, right?
Right.
Okay. On the newer stuff, and so define older and newer.
You know, the only way I can probably define it is if it has the nipples on the headlight glass assembly.
Uh-huh.
Because with those, with the nipples, that's kind of the...
That's the interference. You want those or you don't want those on the older cars?
If it has those, we can hang the heads on the lights themselves.
Okay, so it's going to have like three or four nipples.
They're like indicator pins, basically.
Right.
And there's little numbers next to them, and we set our machine up for that.
Okay. So if you have the three or four indicator pins...
Yep.
Then we're going to use the newer style stuff.
No, older.
That's older stuff.
Older, yeah. All right. That's all older cars. But like my truck and your truck, we don't have that on ours, so we have to use the other machine.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so on our newer trucks, we have big pieces of plastic glass or plastic over our headlights with a bulb behind them, and the headlight can be 12 inches wide and 4 inches tall.
And only one adjuster screw. Yep.
And what? How much? Are you running? Are you,
can I get a phone number for a time and place?
Well, yes, you can. If you're ready, it's 480-598-1234, and you'd want to call and make an appointment and ask for Alan, and he'll take care of you.
All right, just tickles me pink. Thank you.
All right, you betcha. Thank you.
No problem.
All righty. TOT Alan turned over to AES, and it's a headlight adjust. I still adjust everything I have with the barn door.
Yeah, me too. So do I.
Just the other day, I was with a friend of mine. Well, Daryl, you remember Daryl. And he was taking me home, and I was looking at his headlights, and I said, you know, you got one off to the left and one a little high on the right. And he goes, yeah, I've never really had it. So I said, well, pull over by the barn. So he pulls his truck up against the barn, and honest to goodness, the right one looks like it's going to Mars, and the left one looks like it's going left.
Yep.
So when you look at the big picture, and then I looked, and he didn't have any fog lights on. And so I looked, and he had both bulbs burned out.
Oh, yeah.
So I replaced the two bulbs, adjusted his headlights using the line in the bar door, and he tells me I did great.
Yeah.
So I only charged him like $400. 602-508-0960. Of course I didn't. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan Salem, and we're here at your service, 602-508-0960. We've got Felix and George on the line, but they've got three lines open, so if you'd like to join us, you certainly can. I want to talk just for a few seconds about Larry Harker's Auto. They're the oldest shop we have on our list. They've been around since 1967. Larry Harker's Auto is run by Bob and his wife Ellen, and they are some kind of nice people. Ellen runs the front counter, and the appointments, and the books, and the repair orders, but Bob handles the shop. And as far as being a diagnostician, Bob is probably one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met. He just has the tenacity and the knowledge of how the circuit works in order to find the problem. Just the other day, I sent him a guy with a Dodge truck, and he had some air conditioning problem, he had some airbag problem, and Bob was able to fix both of them. Not only find them, but fix them. And that's the real key. A lot of guys can say, I can fix that, but when the push comes to shove, then they spend... And when you get somebody that puts on seven parts to fix your car, there's not anybody that's going to believe that it needs all seven parts, that five of those were guesses, probably. But you're not going to have that at Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. If you have to drive, they're well worth the time. Let's go to Felix. Felix, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, what's happening, Mark?
Not much.
you and I had a conversation a while back about batteries, and you were talking to use sealed batteries. And up here in Payson, I went around to all the stores, and you can't find those things. Everybody's got the ones where you pop the lids off. I'm just wondering, is it why is that? Is that because of price or what?
You know, I've said before, 89% of the batteries in the United States are made by the same company. I don't know. I think it's possible, and I say this with a nice way. I'm not being derogatory. I think it's possible that the community is somewhat conservative, and they're a little uncomfortable with a sealed battery. And as a result of that, many of the auto parts stores have lost sales because people want to see caps and they want to see acid inside the particular cells. So the difference being, Felix, is this. When you have a sealed battery, the evaporation occurs, but it goes to the top of the battery where it's cooled, and it turns back to liquid, and then it falls back into the battery. So we do have a turnover of the water, where a non-sealed battery, when we gas, that gas escapes the caps, never to return again. So that's the reason why you typically have to feed a distilled water or a deionized water or just tap water to your battery. So I can't answer your question why they don't do it. I don't think you guys have that many part stores up there. But, I don't know why. I just think it might have to do with the customer base.
All right, that's good enough for me. I'm out here looking at mine. I got to clean this thing off here in my Tundra, and I was going to, go out and get one. But like I say, I did some research a while back. We've got, like, O'Reilly's, AutoZone, NAPA up here, and Walmart, as you well know. And, yeah, I only found, I think O'Reilly's had one, as I recall, but that was it.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mark.
All right, thank you for calling, Felix. George, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, guys. Good chatting with you.
Thank you.
I happen to be driving today and thinking I love listening to your show on Saturdays, and then I go, wait a minute, talking about electrical, and I just realized I have an electrical problem with my car.
Okay.
I got a 2010 Altima, and one of my taillights was out, and so I said, all right, I'm smart enough to figure this out. And so I went on YouTube, found a video on how to dismantle that housing, and it turned out I was watching a video for a different year, so when I popped it out, I missed a few clips, and that's the second part of it. But that's the main part of my question, is when I pulled the assembly apart to get to the bulb, the outer plastic glass part separated from the part that actually attaches to the car.
Yep.
Me?
Yes.
So it's separated now, and so I'm trying to figure out what is the best adhesive method to reattach that so I don't get air in there or water in there, more importantly. And then I got a secondary question as well.
All right. What are you thinking?
How did that get pulled apart?
Well, you forgot a couple of clips. So he was prying on it, and he broke the lens from the reflector.
And it's not broken. It's just separated.
It's separated.
It's black underneath and then clear up top.
Yeah.
And the two clips that I didn't realize were attached there when I pulled it, the video said, all you do is lift it out, and I'm all, it's not lifting. And I figured, all right, it's been sitting here 6 years. Maybe it's kind of seized in place. And I pulled it up, and I heard it crack a little bit.
Okay.
So
what would you use if you broke his taillight?
Honestly, I would put it in an oven and heat it back up and squish it back together.
Okay. That's assuming that there's a gasket in there.
Yeah, there's got to be something. And there's some glue. Does there appear to be glue in there or something?
I can't tell if it's glued or heat sealed. It doesn't look like there's glue. It looks like, like you're suggesting, plastic that might have been just heat sealed together. I don't know.
Vulcanized together.
Yeah, vulcanized.
Well, why not just use a clear GE silicone? I mean, a good quality name brand silicone. Why don't you just gap it with that and stick some in there and then clamp it, let it sit for overnight, and then take a razor blade, clean off the outside, and put the light back together. Would that be an option?
Like the Home Depot kind of stuff? But
well,
I mean,
I'm talking GE.
High quality?
Yeah. I have a real... I've tried some silicone that has let me down, and I've pretty much settled on name brands. And I do like and I do buy the GE clear silicone from Home Depot or Lowe's. I buy that a lot. So
they have a new Loctite one, too.
A new
Loctite clear.
Okay.
That's like an instant.
Gotcha.
That you put it on a brick and put it on the wall, and it's locked in like 3 seconds.
What bothers me about that is there's no recovery from it.
Oh, no, yeah.
So if he leaves a little hole out – then he can't go back there and do that again.
Right.
So with the GE silicone, he can take a razor blade and carve out that area, and silicone will stick to silicone. So that's what kind of – but I like the monkey glues and all those kinds of stuff. I'm just thinking that overall and the purpose, again, is to keep the dust and the moisture out of the taillight assembly.
Right.
And silicone just seems to be the very best thing. So that's our answer, silicone. Okay.
I have a secondary question related to that, too. The bulb went out. It was a standard OEM bulb, and I was at Walmart, and I'm like, hey, let me try one of these LEDs. So I got a couple of these LEDs and put it in, and now when I push my brakes, my radio lights dim. Like, you know, when you turn your headlights and your lights dim on the inside? And that is the only light that it occurs with. So if I tap the brakes, it dims. And it started happening right after I put in those LED bulbs. Could that have anything to do with this?
I'll tell you what, we have seen an amazing amount of issues arisen from putting LED bulbs in. And the reason for that, like on my Dodge, I'll give you a perfect example. My headlights, all my lights on my Dodge are PCM controlled. So when I started putting LEDs in my Dodge, the PCM realized that it thought, because the LED was drawing so little current, it thought that the light bulb was actually out, and it would say headlight out or fog light out or brake light out. It can cause a lot of different issues. Why would it be doing it on the radio? I'm not certain about that.
I'll bet you that the dash lights, the radio is part of the dash lights, and it's probably the most fragile part of the dash lights. People don't understand that when you lose your dash lights, they're almost always tied to your tail lights, and they do that on purpose. So if you lose your dash lights, it brings your attention to a problem. Dash lights are almost tied to the tail lights all the time, almost on every car. So if you lose your dash lights, you have to watch behind you because people aren't going to see you. In that particular case, I agree with you, because the PCM is not going to see any kind of a load applied to that wire, because that little stupid LED, and I don't mean stupid,
right,
that little bitty LED is not going to draw any power. They're three times brighter, and they used 80% less electricity.
Right.
So the answer to your question is you're going to have to go in there and put those factory bulbs back in just to make sure that you've done a clean test. That's all. Just make sure you've done a clean test. Then what I would do if I were you, did you put two LEDs in or just one?
I swapped them both out.
Okay. All righty. Stay right there. Alan and I want to talk about this off the air, and we're going to take a break. So you stay right there, and we're going to put you on hold. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto. I know Kurtz. He's a good guy. Eric is his diagnostician technician, and he's up at I-17 in Bell. If you live anywhere close to I-17 in Bell and you don't already have a repair shop, then I would suggest that you stop by Kurtz. Kurtz won the Better Business Bureau Ethics Award for his classification last year, and that really says a lot. They opened their doors in 1987. Kurtz works on domestic and import cars, both gas and diesel. He has technicians that are ASE certified, which means your vehicle is going to be repaired by well-trained and certified technicians, and let me add honest to that as well. Kurtz Auto is, again, at I-17 in Bell, the northeast corner. If you have a shop, then try them for an oil change and you can compare. If you don't have a shop, just stop by. That's Kurtz Auto Repair. Alrighty, we're talking real quick. We were talking to George, and so what is it that you order for your car to compensate for the small amount of electrical load that LED, the aftermarket LED light bulbs you're putting in cars?
You hit the wrong button.
I know.
There's a load, what is it called? Load resistor that you can add in to the, so basically draws more current, and it, you know, suffices for the PCM to think that there's a light bulb in there.
So do you just go to Google and Google?
Yeah, the last time I purchased for my truck and Andy's truck, and they were, I got them at Amazon. They were like $7 or $8 for four of them.
Okay, and what do they look like?
They're like, the ones I got were like orange or copper looking.
Okay.
And they look sort of like a roll of Lifesavers, and they have a wire coming out of each end.
Just one wire coming out of each end.
That's it.
Okay, so then are you going to put that on the hot side or
you connect the positive and the negative side.
So he's going to take the power in the ground of that circuit and hook it to each end of that roll of Lifesavers.
That's it.
Okay, and that's what fixed your truck.
Yes.
Okay, so your truck doesn't tell you that the lights are out anymore.
Nope, and it doesn't flash. It doesn't flash fast. It doesn't do anything. They're all perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Hope that helped.
Where do you put that? Where do you put that?
Right. I put mine about 6 inches behind the bulb.
Oh, so it goes at the, well, you're talking the positive and negative of the actual bulb.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. So go about 6 inches.
I got you.
Yeah. And there's no cutting or splicing. All you need is a pair of pliers and they have a,
quick disconnect.
Yeah. Like
a quick connect
or a quick tap. And, okay. You just slide it on the thing. And that's it. It's real simple. And yeah, like on Amazon for like, you know, if you type in LED, load, they'll come up. Millions of them will come up.
Thanks so much for your help. Glad to listen to you guys.
No problem.
Thank you, George. Thank you. Harry, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yeah, Mark, good talking to you.
Thank you.
Hey, I know you've been talking about adding chips and stuff to vehicles and allowance. That's kind of his business. I read an article here a while back, and they were talking about the EPA was initially going after racers that were using late model vehicles to take emissions stuff off. Well, they backed off on it and said that they were going to maybe go after the suppliers or makers of, sounded to me like they're going after the makers of the chips and things that, you know, that you use, add a little more power to your vehicles. Have you heard anything about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that comes up all the time.
Everything now that we sell is CARB compliant.
And CARB compliant is California's standard, which is higher than anybody else. So most of these programmers and most of these hotshots that are building these components to make your car better, most of them live in California. Because when we went to reproduce, we had to get new programming for a twin-turbo Corvette that we built, and actually we found a programmer in California that was able to reprogram our PCM for pressure and vacuum in the intake system as opposed to just vacuum, because with twin turbos, you're going to have pressure as well as vacuum. So CARB compliant means a lot in our industry, because if it passes California Air Board, then it really passes the other 49 states. Because really and truly, as you well know, Harry, California people are different than the other 49 states in every way, shape, or form.
Well, you heard the latest deal about the cows over there. They're going to start charging the farmers the methane that the cows
emit.
Exit, you know?
Talking about cows? Wait a minute. Yeah. Harry, you called the show to talk about cows farting?
No, I'm just saying California is kind of off the charts.
You know, 1 minute.
You got to tax the cow, belching or tooting or whatever, methane gas, you know, I don't know.
Well, I would imagine that they've gotten more than enough people over in California that would be happy to walk around and lift the tail of the cow and sniff and be paid for it. So that's the only comment I have for you, Harry.
Yeah, but they just signed a law. Governor Brown just signed a new law. So I don't know.
If you read half the stuff that comes out of California, it is so way far out of real world. You know, I only hope and pray when the Lord caves in the west side of the country that he stops at the Colorado River. You know, that's all I can say. Well, Harry, thanks for making me.
Thanks
for laughing. And I'm sure I'll get called in Monday morning wanting to know what we were talking about on the radio. But I have my own chair at the general manager's office, so when I come in, I know exactly where to sit. When we come back, the lines are open, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, I think we're done talking about methane and cows. So we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour, we've got room for two more phone calls this hour for the rest of the show. So if you have a car question, now's the time to get in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Tom, who owns Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley. Action Auto Repair is a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that's been up there since 1983. Folks, there's a lot of shops that come and go, but these guys on my list have been around for 10, 15, some of them 20 years, and some of them even longer than that. And Tom's been around a doggone long time. So whatever your repair needs are, you can stop by and talk with Tom and his staff. They'll talk to you about your car problems. They'll take a drive with you. They'll do all that kind of stuff for free. But they won't fix your car, and they won't diagnose the specific problem unless it's something as easy as a tire that's got a tread separation. Their technicians are ASE Master certified, and they do know what they're doing. So that's Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. John, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning, sir. I'm having trouble getting a grease gun off of the Zerks on my fittings of my trailer. As soon as I pump a little grease into it, I literally pulled out two of the press fit Zerks, trying to get the tip off. I unscrewed the tip, try to release pressure. I don't know if it's the Zerk itself is the problem or the tip not letting go.
It's more than likely the tip's not letting go. And the only thing that I know you can do is buy a handful of Zerts and put them in your vise with the Zerk part up, and then just take that gun and just connect and disconnect, because that's really what you need. Now, one of the other things that you could do, do you have a garage that you normally deal with?
I do.
I would call, if somebody came to me and said, hey, Mark, I got this brand new nipple, but I'm really having a tough time, it's not working. Can I trade you for one of your well-worn ones on one of your guns? And the answer would be yes. Of course you can.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that's what you really need, is you just need a new nipple. Now, they're not that expensive, and you could have got one that for whatever reason just wasn't machined right. This is the first time in my life I've ever heard of this. However, I would think that if you went to like Napa and bought a brand new tip, that the chances are that that would probably be just grind for you. Hey, by the way, what color grease are you using on your trailer?
It's just the lithium grease.
Okay. You're better served with either a red or a green. Are you doing the wheel bearings on it?
I've done the wheel bearings last year. This time I'm just doing the shackles.
Okay. All right. The white lithium is fine, but what's better is the waterproof green or the high-temp red. And I just make that as part of a suggestion to you, okay?
Like sticky red?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I did buy a new tip from a Napa store. The guy said that they're all Chinese, made in China, but it seems to have the same problem. So I'm beginning to suspect it's the actual Zerk itself that's on these shackles.
Yeah. Well, and you're describing something where you're pulling them out of the threads, and that's not a good thing. So, like I said, the only other thing is if you've already had two of those that have this problem, you could just put some new Zerts on your shackles of your trailer after you've identified that those will work a lot better in the vise, because it may be. How old is your trailer?
It's 8 years old, but I replaced all of the shackles. They're the high-end, greasable, wet bolt shackle.
Okay. All righty. Yeah, just I don't know what else to tell you. It's just a problem that I've never run across. But like I said, if you have a garage, you just might ask him, can I swap your tips? He's not going to care.
One other question. My son's got a 2006 Duramax, an LBZ, diesel motor in it. A few months ago, he had a problem that after putting some steps, the retractable steps on it, that the engine wouldn't start. We think that somehow in putting the electrical in it, the control module up under the hood right next to the radiator must have gotten or touched with 12 volts. And so we went online and we found a suggestion that you take and hook a ground wire to those little dimples that are all over the heat sink on there.
Yeah.
And that caused the truck to start. So something's happened inside of that transmission control module in that process of installing the steps. So as long as it has a ground clip hooked to those little dimples on that transmission control module, the truck will start and run normally.
It's bad. We replace them all the time. It's likely. It may have been something you did, but that's a very common repair.
Okay, so you have to replace the transmission control module?
Yep. Replace and reflash the TCM, yep.
And here's the problem is we're looking at here, him and I are looking at one another. I don't know how many sets of steps we install a month, but it's got to be 5 or 10 sets of steps. And
yeah.
We've never had that problem.
No.
And so we're wondering, all you do is wire those up to the courtesy lights. And the courtesy lights don't go through the transmission control module, or they yeah. shouldn't go through no, the transmission.
Well, yeah, there is a power wire that goes over to the battery system.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's some kind of a brain there that also goes right there at the battery. But
yeah,
but
we've
in
never.
Any event, it is what it.
Yeah, we've never experienced that. We're hooking into the courtesy light circuit.
And door ajar switch.
Door ajar switch. We're hooking into that thing to open and close the doors. But how much is the TCC and have it flashed?
I want to say it's like $500 or less.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how much.
But if you wanted to leave the ground wire on the case and it's still everything else was normal, then you could certainly leave it there. The problem is that you run a risk of causing some additional damage, and without knowing what's really wrong with it, no one can say it's going to be okay or it's not going to be okay. But you only have two options, either replace the transmission control module or just leave your ground strap on there and go from there.
Okay.
All right, good luck to you.
Thank you, John.
And Dan, you're up next. How can we help you, Dan?
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, I've got a 2009 Chevy Express one-ton van with a 6-liter gas V8. When I'm towing my travel trailer up the I-17 out of Black Canyon City, I'm having to tuck in behind the 18-wheelers going 25 with our flashers on. I heard you guys talking about the chips and programmers earlier. Two quick questions. Could I benefit from something like that?
What year is the vehicle?
2009.
What motors it got in it, though?
6-liter, yes.
Oh, it's a 6-liter? Okay.
Yeah.
The gas are kind of tricky because you're going to spend a lot of money for not a ton of horsepower. Okay. I mean, you typically spend $1,500. If we do an exhaust, an intake, and a programmer, you're going to spend $1,500 to $1,700, and you're going to get like 40 horsepower, 45 horsepower.
And that's not going to be enough to move. How much does your trailer weigh, by the way?
It's only about 6,000.
Okay, two axles or three?
Two.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. If you were to work this a little harder, are you on the floor at 25 miles an hour?
No.
Okay.
No. And that's kind of my second question, is what is a safe, sustainable RPM when I'm climbing that hill?
Well, I'd say it's probably 500 off the red line.
It's got a digital tack, so I don't know what the red line is.
Okay. It's kind of like just kind of drive it. And here's the deal. I would take control of the transmission because I think you're probably experienced when you're going up the hill, you get going kind of fast, you back off the throttle, it drops from fourth gear to fifth gear, then you throttle back up, and then it drops from fifth gear to fourth gear, and the transmission is hunting up and down as you go up, and you let go of the gas, you hit the gas, you let go of the gas, you hit the gas. So when you start those hills, pull it yourself down into third and hold it there and just listen to the motor. I think that 09's probably got a rev limiter on it. So I don't think that motor's going to let you go into an area. But I wouldn't know. If you have a garage, have him take a ride and put it in first or second gear and tell you what comfortable RPM he's at. I'm thinking 4,000.
Yeah. What are you running it at currently when you're going up at 25? What's it at?
Well, actually, I'm probably around 40 miles per hour.
Oh, okay.
Realistically, in third gear, and I do manually drop into third gear, but I'm typically running about 4,000 RPM.
At 45, 4,000 RPMs, that doesn't scare me.
The 25 bugged us,
yeah,
but the 45 doesn't bug us. You are right in the center of where you need to be, or where everybody else is at. So if you're in third gear, you're running 4,000 or a little higher, and you're doing 45 miles an hour with a 6,000-pound trailer, I think Alan's right. You can spend $1,500, but if you get 40 horsepower, you're not going to be able to tell that, and you're not going to be happy you spent that money.
Right.
So,
okay.
And if he was going to do anything, why not just do exhaust? Isn't that going to be the best benefit for him to open up the exhaust as opposed to the programmer and the cold air kit and all the other stuff?
I mean, if I had to only do one, I would do an exhaust, but what makes the most power is probably the programmer. Yeah.
Okay. And the problem with the programmer is they specifically don't want you to tow large loads with the programmer. So you're kind of using something that's not really designed for your pulling. It's really designed to just make that express a little bit more fuerte, a little tougher, without the trailer on it. And see, you're asking it to do something that it's really not. They don't want to do. So anyway, Dan, good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling in. Gil, do we have anybody else?
Yes, we have Tom.
Tom, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Morning. Question on a starter. I've got an old 98 Honda Accord. I was doing the troubleshooting on it. I believe it's the solenoid, not the starter. Nobody wants to sell me just a solenoid. Any ideas where I can get one, sir?
No one wants to sell you a solenoid because they go... By the time the solenoid goes bad, the starter's 140 years old. And we all know that putting in a solenoid, that means it's going to come back, and the customer's going to... Well, I may speak from a shop's point of view. The customer's going to be mad. So at my shop, you're not getting anything except the whole package, and I'm not ripping you off. I'm doing what's in your best interest. And there can't be that much difference between the solenoid by itself and the starter. And with a packaged solenoid on it. So I would just tell you, really and truly, if you're going to go all the work to take that starter out, which is unbolt everything at the back of the solenoid and a couple starter bolts and maybe a hanger at the back, then just do yourself a favor. If you've got a 98, this thing's 12 years. Well, it's not quite 12 years old. It's 10. It's 8 years old, right? Is 8 years old?
98?
Yeah. 90, oh, that's right. I forgot a digit there, didn't
yeah,
I? So it's 18 years old. I would think that you'd want to put a starter and solenoid in it. And here's how you – if you go to my website, marksalem.com, and you go to FAQ, I think it's 28, it tells you how to use the headlights to diagnose whether it's the solenoid or the starter.
Okay.
And the solenoid, if it just click, click, clicks, and the headlights barely dim, that means the electrical draw is nothing. So that's the solenoid. But if you go click, 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 and the headlights dim a lot and then come back on, that means the starter's shorted. And I want to tell you something. My very best techs are going to have to put a voltmeter on that and run an inductive amp probe off that positive cable to determine whether it's a solenoid or the starter. I could do it up at the ranch, but I also have an inductive amp probe, and I have a digital voltometer, and I know how to check it. So in your particular case, while you think it's a solenoid, I suggest to you, you only have a chance of being 50-50 right. And I'd hate for you to do all that work. But if you really wanted a solenoid, you're going to have to contact a starter rebuilding company. Can you think of anybody right now?
No.
Just go starter rebuild company on Google, and you can probably buy a solenoid from them. For the rest of you, if you have any email questions Monday through Friday, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you're welcome to send them to me, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. You can send me an email. You can go to our website, marksalem.com. There's lots of information. There's lots of FAQs there. And there's also a list of the best car repair shops in Phoenix. That list has been around since 1988, folks. That list, I've worked very hard to provide you the very best and honest repair shops that are around. They all know that they have to do a good job, and it's not any struggle for any of these guys. So we have mechanical shops, we have tire shops, we have paint and body shops, we have guys that work on diesels. So you can find just about any kind of shop you want. The only thing we don't have is an upholstery shop, and we've looked for those. And Palacios up in Scottsdale is probably as close as we've come.
Right.
And we use them personally, but in reality, finding an auto repair shop is a crapshoot. And here's my promise to you. If you have a problem with one of my shops and the Better Business Bureau says to the shop to write you a check and they refuse, I'll write the check up to $5,000. I personally will write the check. And folks, since 1988, that's never happened. So marksalem.com is our website. Thanks for spending your Saturday with us. Every Saturday between 10 and noon, we're here talking about cars. But like I said, you can still get me on email. See you next week.